DJ Lederman. Now, that's a name that you've heard a thousand times if you're a regular public radio listener. Think about it a moment. Where have you heard that? That's right. It's at the end of many of your favorite shows when the credits come on and he is credited with writing yet another wonderful, bouncy, poignant, emotional theme song that perfectly captures the feeling of the show that you've just listened to. It just happens that BJ lives not very far from WETS, just south of us in North Carolina, and recently I convinced him to come in the studio, and now I'm going to share it with you. It's your weekly constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and this week it doesn't have anything to do with the Constitution. It's all about BJ.
Welcome to your weekly constitutional, hosted by Professor Stuart Harris and produced in partnership with the Robert H. Smith Center for the Constitution at James Madison's historic home, Montpelier.
Confused yet? Normally when you tune into your weekly constitutional, you get fifes and drums or some offbeat music that Wayne has picked out. But that, of course, was a sampler of some of the most prominent, most enjoyable, most tuneful themes from all of public radio. And today, in the studio, we've got the guy who wrote them.
Well, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Jose E. Madness. Sorry, it's a little too early for this. This is BJ Lederman speaking to you from the studios of WETS FM in beautiful Johnson City, Tennessee. And if I thought Asheville was beautiful, man, this place is great.
It is. It rocks and it rolls. And who else is with us here today?
I'm Wayne Winkler, the producer of your show.
Indeed you are. Indeed, this is your station. Thanks for joining us, Wayne. And people who've already recognized BJ's name and already know you, Wayne, know exactly why you're sitting in today, because this is a rather unusual interview for your weekly constitutional. But that's okay. You know, we occasionally stray a little bit from our focus. And today we're doing something that I think people are really going to enjoy. And that's talking and listening to you, BJ.
Today we're actually going to break your show. I hope you have enough super glue to put it back together. All these people in the stands back there, it's your whole staff are sitting back there. Everything is, you know.
What is the use of having a radio show if you can't break it occasionally?
That's right. I mean, it's your show. You can do what you want, right?
Exactly right. Right. But we do owe just a little bit of explanation. And so it turns out that you are a fan.
I'm an avid listener. I have been for a long time. I've been listening on WETS from Asheville because I can actually get the signal on the air in my car. It's funny, when WCQS fades out around a mountain or something, then I switch and I can get ETS.
Oh, fantastic.
It's pretty funky.
Right.
Okay. So I'm listening one day. I don't remember exactly what the subject matter was of the show, but I do remember that the music that came in at the end caught my attention because it got me laughing because it was a comment on the show, and it was a point of view, so to speak. I'm trying to remember what it was, and I may have it by the end of the show. Because I barely remember what I had to eat for breakfast.
I don't remember any of that stuff personally. But what I want to clarify here is that you're talking about our daily show.
Yes, the daily show.
Which WETS listeners are familiar
with.
Right,
the Daily Constitution.
Right. Not all of our affiliates get that. So what
I just... I don't understand why they don't.
Well, I appreciate that, of course.
It's a most hip 90 seconds.
Well, that was always our thought. It's a 90-second version. Well, a variation on this theme. Wayne and I came up with it, the idea a couple of years ago when Earth and Sky, which was another short feature about astronomy, went off the air after 20 years. And we thought, you know, you'd been running that here for years.
Yes, we had. And we thought, well, there's a spot on our station for it, maybe on other stations as well. So
other stations have picked it up, but not all of them yet. And so this program directors at all of our stations, you want to get the daily as well. It works beautifully. We run it each morning during morning edition.
And every afternoon during All Things Considered as well.
Exactly right. And what we do is we take typically something current in constitutional law, whether it's abortion or gay rights or whatever it is, First Amendment stuff coming up frequently. And then the real kicker, and what BJ was talking about, is that at the end of it, and I think this is the part you enjoy the most, Wayne, is you come up with what I refer to as the eye roll music. Now, why do I call it the eye roll music?
Well, because I take my kids to school every morning, and it comes on right before they have to get out of the car. And whenever they hear the song that I've chosen, my daughter gives the face palm, and my son is saying, "Why do you have to be such a smart aleck?"
So you really work hard at that.
Yes, I do. It's fun trying to find the right song to go with that. Sometimes it's rather challenging. Sometimes the song just makes itself known.
I'd like to have your job, actually.
Well, that's the best part of it.
One day after the album and after all this stuff, maybe that's the job I'll have at some, you know, college public radio station.
It could happen, but I doubt it. I think your career is pretty secure, but that does bring us back to you.
Yeah.
After we received your marvelous email and after we were so thrilled to know that you were listening, of course, I knew who you were. Everybody who listens to public radio has heard the credits, and our theme music is by BJ Lederman. I remember the first time I heard that years and years ago. No, it was probably the second or third time I heard it. I started thinking, who the heck is this guy? And how did he get a lock on so many of these shows? And of course, ever since that time, the wonderment has only increased. And that's why I'm thrilled. And that's why I said, BJ, you got to come on the show. And your response was, what the heck do I have to say in a show about the Constitution? Right. And I said, it doesn't matter.
Right.
That's why we're here.
Good. I'm glad you invited me. I still hope I don't break your show. I have a lot of funny stories and interesting stories that, in fact, a lot of your listeners, they always ask me the same questions. You know, I'm thinking about Paul McCartney now. God bless him. I was a John Lennon fan. In fact, if you're wondering why I'm in music, listeners, it's the Beatles. Yes, I was 8 years old when my parents sat me down in front of the TV set to watch the Ed Sullivan Show. Mm-hmm. And he went, "Now here they are, the Beatles." And I looked and listened at this thing and it changed my life. Anyway, McCartney is asked the same questions, you know, and he's the one now holding the Beatle banner high.
Sure.
And he does it with such charm and such skill, you know, and handling it with kid gloves. And I always thought it was John's band, but no, Paul McCartney was the musical director of that band. So I got a lot of my musical stuff from Paul.
Yeah.
But the Beatles taught me harmony. I had a friend who was a drummer, and I played drums too, and he played piano, so we switched off piano and drums in elementary school. His name is David Lively. He's a wonderful actor in Chicago now. And we called ourselves the Lively Sound Dimension. And on the front of his kick drum, in psychedelic letters, LSD, Lively Sound Dimensions. Little did we know that later on in college, I would, you know, be studying chemistry for a while. So yeah, we learned every Beatles song there was. We'd learn it note for note. We'd learn it. So it's a really good education in songwriting and melody and harmony and playing by the rules and then breaking the rules, you know, all that stuff.
Right. And so did you start performing at a young age?
We actually, the Lively Sound Dimension, actually had our first gig at the sixth grade school fair at Thalia Elementary School, in my neighborhood called Thalia in Virginia Beach. And we were a 4 or 5 piece, David on drums, me on piano, and a bass and a guitar player. And I remember we didn't have a PA system. So we had one microphone on the piano, like a boom mic, stand just like now. And Since we didn't have a PA system, I asked my neighbor, Sammy Schwartz, if we could borrow his father's 16-millimeter film projector, which, as you remember, if you're old enough and saw films in elementary school or high school, it was the thing where the projector was in the back and it shown the image on the screen, and then a long cord brought the speaker up to set under the screen. So we set the 16-millimeter projector shining off into the corner of the room and used the speaker and the input for a microphone, and that was our microphone.
Well, PA. That was innovative.
And we were doing stuff like the monkeys, you know. Hey, Hey, We're the Monkeys and Stepping Stone and Get Off My Cloud by the Stones and, you know, some Beatles stuff. And we were having a great time. I don't know what the hell we sounded like.
But that was the beginning
that
of
was
all
the beginning,
of this.
Yes.
And did you have an inkling at that young age that you were going to make a career out of music?
No, but I did have an inkling I was not going to make a career out of school. I knew that for sure. And,
right.
And sure shooting, let's see, it was 1974. I started out, you know, it's a shorter list to give you the number of colleges that I didn't go to
mm-hmm.
than the ones I went to. And the first one was Virginia Tech. And that's, again, where I was once again studying chemistry, and, mm-hmm. Right? And, you know, chemists, sure. scientists, if you do an experiment and if you don't get the results you like, you repeat the experiment.
Indeed, you do. You have to.
All right. So eventually I sort of got asked to disattend or unattend get off of their cloud, in other words.
They have something called a corps of cadets there.
Oh.
And they march around in military.
At 4 in the morning, they get up and start marching.
Was you part of that?
No.
Oh, okay. Yes, I was having difficulty imagining that.
I was up, you know. It's 4 in the morning and they're doing, you know, the drum corps. And they're right outside my dorm window because we were at the upper quad where they had their marching field. So I was, you know, I would open my window and yell some obscenity out there, which, you know, trying to sleep. So I guess I was part of the drum corps, the marching unit, if that counts.
Uh-huh.
But
this is reminding me of your school experiences, Wayne.
Oh, yeah. The ones I can remember anyway.
Well, it gets better because from there, I didn't go right to American University. I did stop by in Norfolk, Virginia and was a cameraman at the CBS affiliate WTAR for a while. Mm-hmm. And these are in the days where, you know, it's a non-union shop and the kids, it was a summer job basically. We did everything from put sets together, run camera, run audio. The newscaster, when you see a picture behind him, the blue screen thing, you know, the Chiron and stuff. And then to set lights, they would make us sit in the star seat and look directly up at the spotlight where someone was adjusting it until it was brightest on our face. In other words, in our eyes, which is why I'm half blind now.
That was part of your job,
yeah,
was to get
yeah.
you blinded by spotlights.
Yeah, I was blinded by the light. Never mind. And then the lucky break came when I went to American University in 1976, 77.
Were you playing all this time?
No, you know, it's funny. Well, there were two bands I was in, and because of all this chemistry, all these chemistry experiments, I can't really remember the exact dates. I'm sure that friends of mine listening out there will be able to put this together. But I left American University for a year. I took a year's leave of absence. I told the dean, I want to go across the country with a band. Friends of mine from Virginia Beach had invited me to join their band called SMEE 2. SMEE, S-M-E-E, after Peter Pan. Captain Hook's first mate was
okay.
Mr. Smee.
Okay.
And Roman numeral 2, which means it was the second version of the band. So I joined them at the height of their popularity. And they had a tour booked across the country, California and back. And so I was supposed to do that for a year. My parents gave their blessings because they figured if we do this, he's going to get it out of his system and go back to school and become a doctor or a lawyer like mm-hmm. we want him to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to put it bluntly, I'm a senior now. If I got all my credits together, I probably could go back and be a senior at American University. But they won't give me an honorary degree.
They won't?
No. I sort of looked into that. No, it would be doing them a big disservice if they gave me, or at least the other folks who got honorary degrees would suddenly be burning their paper, you know?
It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and we're not talking about the Constitution today. We're talking about music, and specifically the music of B.J. Lederman, that fellow you've heard of 1,000 times at the end of a show on public radio where they give the credits. Yep, he's in the studio, and I'm having a great time. So is Wayne. After the break, we'll talk some more with B.J. Lederman. Stick around. And now it's time to talk some more with B.J. Lederman, the guy who's written all the music we're playing today.
Okay, so you're at American University, and then something happened. Your big break came in 76.
I got a phone call from a very dear friend of mine, Skip Peasy. He was working at NPR in the engineering department. He was with another dear friend of mine, Jerry Peasy, at the time. I used to think they were cousins of mine, but I found out later they weren't. I just called them Skip and Jerry since I was, you know, a young lad. And, you know, I was listening to NPR. In fact, I have one of those t-shirts. I listened to NPR before it was cool.
Right. And this was the infancy of NPR. It started right around 70, didn't it?
No, in the early 70s, yeah. I do believe. All Things Considered was the first news show. And for all you out there who whistle the All Things Considered theme when they write it, they say, PJ, I've heard your music forever. It's okay, guys. I didn't write that one. Don Vagley of Minnesota Public Radio wrote that years ago.
You handle that very well, though, because I won't mention names, but two different members of our staff came in and told you how much they love the All Things Considered themes.
Yeah. They hum that. You know, they say, we listen to your music forever, and they go, da, 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 and then I go, oh, I'm sorry.
That's not the one. Okay.
I didn't write that one. But you know what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. You know, 20, 30 years from now, when I'm dead and gone, whoever the new NPR jingle king is going to get the same from like I did.
Right.
People are going to come up to him and go, you know, I've been listening to your music for the past 20 years, you know, and they're going to go, da, 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 and he's going to go, oh, geez, now B.J. Lederman wrote that. He's dead. He's still dead.
All right, so for this big break, I keep interrupting
you.
Yeah,
that's okay. I got the phone call, and he said, they're putting together a new morning newscast, yet to be named. We don't know what it is. So I went in and had a meeting with Jim Russell, the original producer of the show, who later went on to create Marketplace and other things. He's got a consulting firm now called The Show Doctor, which helps shows, you know, boost their numbers and get their act together and that kind of thing. But back then, you know, he told me that, you know, people ask, what were you told? How did you write this thing? You know, what were the parameters? And at that time, most of the public radio member stations were coming out of classical music programming, you know, early morning stuff, 5, 6 in the morning. I think it was 6 o'clock mostly that the thing was going to hit the air. And so the idea was, don't jar them awake, you know, no reveille, in other words. So what I did was come up with a pseudo-classical opening, which actually had harpsichord, flute, oboe, I believe, and then a cymbal roll. Actually, it was a backwards cymbal roll that I learned from the Beatles. That kind of thing. Came in and gently, you know, like a runway, laid us into the contemporary intro. And they liked it. It was a spring break. I went home, and so I must have already been in the first band because I did it on the cheesy little Krumar orchestrator synthesizer that I used in the band. It did cheesy strings, it did cheesy brass, it did a nice bass, and cheesy piano. What I did was 4 tracks. I mixed a cassette, sent it to Skip Peasy, and he gave it to Jim Russell, and they said, we love this. And the highest compliment that I got during all this came back to me later. They said, we used to play it at our creative meetings, you know, we said, we don't have a show yet, but listen to this music. This vibe is what we want the show to sound like.
Wow, that is a compliment.
Yeah.
Could you give us just a few bars of it to remind everybody what the theme is?
It is just very simple. Mm-hmm. But the funniest thing is, and the reason I'm here talking to you, Jim Russell left the show, left NPR, before the show went on the air, and turned everything over to Jay Kernes. And as the story goes, as best as I can tell it, and I'm trying my best, guys, Jim Russell walked the cassette over to Jay, gave it to Jay Kernes, and said, "This is B.J. Lederman's theme. We like it. We'd like you to use it." And they already had an air date and stuff, so it was kind of pressure cooker then, I guess. And I met Jay, and Jay and I worked on variations of the theme. You'll notice that, well, at least at the beginning, you know, more so when it was just my theme music, we did a number of cuts, 20, 30, 40, and later on 50 different little stingers, you know, three-second things, five-second things, what Jay termed as bleebles, those that continue, the kind of stuff that right. drives people crazy unless there's talking over it. It's funny. Sometimes they do the exact opposite. They talk over the... Huh. And I want to go crazy. And then they don't talk over this bar, which goes forever, you know. Anyway, I worked with Jay. It went on the air. It was a hit. And then they came back to me for Weekend Edition. They came back to me for Marketplace. They came back to me for the Stump the Chumps theme inside Car Talk. And Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And then the most recent thing I did when Talk of the Nation ended, Science Friday survived. So I called up Ira Flatow. I said, "Let's celebrate." And right. he went, "New theme?" I said, "Yeah, new theme." So I just did Science Friday.
Well, you've mentioned one of my favorite felt. Well, you mentioned several interesting things, but I'm a big Ira Flatow fan. Tell us a little bit about Ira. Do you work with him much? Or is it just every 20 years when just, he needs a new theme song?
Ira and I meet every 10 years whether we need to or not. Usually we see each other at an NPR conference or so.
Right.
But... it's interesting. The other interesting thing is, you know, how do you write music for science? And having done a lot of science in college, I figured that, okay, I sat down for like 20 minutes, really 5 minutes, and I said, let's just do particles and waves. So there's a lot of for the particle stuff.
Right. I remember
that.
I can't
really do it because it's kind of programmed in. And there's a guitar part for waves that just, he pedals it in very softly. You know, it just comes in from that kind of stuff.
Right.
Science Friday is the first one that I actually wrote that doesn't have a singable melody. You know, people ask me, what's the secret to your quote-unquote success musically? And I would have to go that most, if not all, my themes have a melody that after just a couple of listens, it buries an earworm in you, you know, that you mm-hmm. can't get out. And it's for some people, they want to kill me because of that. And I understand it. But Science Friday is the first one. It's just groove and beat and chords. You can dance to it.
Right.
Yeah. You know. And, you know, when I play you the medley of most of my themes, it's not in there yet. I have to append that. Science Friday doesn't get to go in the theme medley until you've gone 5 years with the theme, okay?
Was that what it is?
Yeah, he just passed two, okay, second anniversary, so it's all cool. We'll get it in there.
Well, you were mentioning this theme medley. I guess this is as good a time as any to do it because there's got to be at least one or two people on the planet who actually haven't heard all of these theme songs, so why don't we run through it and feel free, if you want to add commentary as you go through it, feel free.
Yeah, I'm going to play these with enjoyment. I've been very lucky. I've played this already with three orchestras around the country. The first was Orchestra Nova under the baton of Young Ho Park, who very kindly invited me to join him in San Diego, California, a few years ago. And it was the most thrilling thing in my life to play my own themes on stage on a, you know, 29-foot Steinway grand piano, whatever, with an orchestra behind me. So I'm going to play these themes now, not like I played them with the orchestra, because I had to really stick to what was on the score. But this is how I do it, and it starts with... Thank you. And a moment of silence for Mr. Magliazzi, and then into Stump the Chumps from Card Talk.
Ooga! Weekend edition.
BJ, well done. BJ Lederman playing a medley of the theme songs that I'm betting everybody who's listening to the show has heard 100 times at least. That's just remarkable. Thank you.
That's going to really screw people up because, you know, okay, listen to Morning Edition in the morning, listen to this one.
Yeah, it's the wrong time of day. It's exactly. People time their lives by it. Clearly, if people could watch what Wayne and I have just been watching and what Mike's watching from the booth, they would see the joy on your face. And I'll just let people know that I have recorded at least a partial video of that. I don't have a lot of storage on my iPhone, but I got several minutes of BJ's theme medley there. And I want, please go to our Facebook page. It's just Your Weekly Constitutional on Facebook, and I'm going to be posting that there shortly. And then you can actually see what we just saw, which was the joy on your face as you do these things. I don't think that was a performance. I think that was really what you were feeling. So now tell me.
Can I tell you where the joy comes from, by the
Please.
Way? It comes from, you know, the more joy as I got toward the end of it, because I was getting toward the end of it.
Oh, is that what it was? It was just joy at being finished.
Yeah, you
no,
know,
I don't believe you. I don't believe you one bit.
It's hard to play this without a band or, you know, it needs a band.
No,
it needs an orchestra.
It sounded fantastic. It sounded just great. It was really a pleasure. Now, what I've really been wanting to ask you about is the creative process. Now, you talked a little bit before about a feel for Morning Edition. You've talked a little bit about, you know, trying to represent waves or particles for Science Friday. Tell me a little bit more. How do you come up with your inspiration?
Well, mainly what I first do is I look at the size of the check.
Very inspiring in some cases, I'm sure.
And I post it on the wall of my studio. You know, I don't cash it right. I post it on the wall. It's the, you know, the deposit.
Mm-hmm.
If the deposit's big, then the theme is going to be grand.
I see.
You're not buying this, are you?
Oh, it makes perfect sense
okay.
to me.
Uh-huh.
That's inspiration.
I don't really know. Both of my parents were musical. I remember actually before the Beatles sitting on the floor as a tot, listening to my mother play everything from classical pieces, you know, Chopin to then what was then known as pop or popular and musical theater pieces, musicals. And my father, although he was a trumpet player, and he was in a band or two in the army. He didn't go around the house playing the trumpet, thank God. But the thing that serves me the best, and I don't know how I got this or where I got this, but something inside me is just simply able to, you know, I do not read music. I'm free to say that now.
Seriously?
I tried to hide that for the first, you know, 3 decades of all that business. I don't read music. I can read, you know, the guitar chords and piano chords on top of sheet mm-hmm. music and stuff. But and I can follow a score. Fine. Mm-hmm. Is there something in my, you know, Lyme disease hidden Britain brain here mm-hmm. that forbids me from figuring out what those dots on the paper have to do with these keys on the piano or the,
right.
you know, the orchestra? So, you know, thankfully along the years have come the computer and various ways of, you know, putting stuff in and getting whatever sounds you want and tweaking them. But the best thing that NPR ever did, every few years they used to put me back in the studio to sort of freshen up the package, to do an alternate version of the theme, which they would use, and then mm-hmm. many more segments and short bumpers and stuff. They put me together with arranger Jim Pugh. When I met him, I was living in New York where I had just done a rock opera based on Dickens' Christmas Carol called Rock Carol. And Jim was an A-list studio musician on trombone. He's currently in Steely Dan, which mm-hmm. ain't bad.
Ain't bad at all.
Okay, for the last, I don't know, over 5 years, when I go see him in concert, you know, he invites me back there, and there he is on trombone with the horn section of Steely Dan. He's on the last few albums of Steely Dan. Anyway, long story short, Jim took my cheesy little, you know, 4 and 8 track demos, and I was introduced to arranger as writer because he actually writes. And I knew that, you know, we wanted to go somewhere else with, you know, and I did have some ideas that I put in there of what the intro would be. And Jim took it, this little, you know, bud of a flower, and flowered this thing out. I could not have done it. In fact, I guarantee you I would not be here sitting in front of you and doing this interview if it weren't for Jim, because my initial arrangements were very innocent, to say the best about them.
Well, you know, that reminds me, though. I think it was Irving Berlin who could not read music.
Right.
But he had the ability when someone would ask him for an idea or maybe give him an idea. Well, I need a song that does X, or I need a song for this show where the girl sings about that.
Yeah.
He could just think for a moment, and all of a sudden a melody would come to him. And I even remember reading a biography, I mean, he would just hum them over the phone to somebody who actually knew how to write the music and who had arranged the music, and then that would be the what would flow out. You're listening to your weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris. And yeah, it's true. We've barely mentioned the Constitution today, haven't we? Because we've digressed a bit. We've gone off on a tangent. This is really more a show about public radio than it is about the Constitution. And specifically, it's a show about the king of public radio theme songs. His name is B.J. Lederman. After the break, we'll finish our conversation with B.J. I wonder what we should play, Wayne, during the break. It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and my executive producer, Wayne Winkler, is starting to get nervous because we haven't talked about the Constitution today. It's all been about music. So, okay, here. The Constitution was written in 1787. Does that do it, Wayne? Yeah. Okay, great. Fabulous. Now, back to B.J. Lederman, the king of public radio theme songs. Now, I respect people with musical ability. I respect the arrangers, and kudos to Jim Pugh. On the other hand, you've got something that not everyone has, and that's the ability to take an idea for a show or whatever and simply come up with something that flows down through your arms and your fingers and comes out in that keyboard.
There is a certain talent in that. I would call Jim, you know, the Paul to my John, you know, sort of like that. I think it's a genetic thing in me. And this is where producers and people who have shows feel most comfortable in dealing with me when it comes to writing themes and stuff like that. Even jingles. I did jingles before. I did everything from dairy commercials to airlines to car commercials. I did not do the Volkswagen, folks. No emission shenanigans in any of my car
jingles.
I'm
so glad to hear that.
But they are very relieved when they find out that, A, I can't read music, so how do we get to, just talk to me. Tell me what the show feels like. Tell me who your audience is, you know, how old they are, what other things they listen to. Play me songs you like. Play me songs you don't like. And I just kind of get it. I kind of get it. When Marketplace was happening, I was told it's an international finance show. Make it sound like international finance. You know, what the hell is international finance? I still had a piggy bank at that time. Okay, that
what
was
do
my
musicians know about finance?
That was they don't know international. They don't know outer national. They don't know nothing about finance. Okay, so I understood that. Okay, let's put some. You know, world music was coming into. And there was enough samples and sounds on our synthesizers at that time where we could dial up, you know, a sitar or a tabla or anything. And so there's a number of those. In fact, Marketplace went through two iterations. The one you hear now, and it's funny because you hardly hear about 9 seconds of the intro before they start talking over it, but there's a nice long minute and a half version of that. And it's got all these world instruments in it, and it's 5/4 time or whatever. And it goes back and forth between different time signatures. And I'm playing every one of those instruments on there, on keyboard and drums. And it just hit the spot as far as, you know, sounding. Oh, the first one I did here, I'm now remembering this, actually had sound effects of the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, all that hubbub that went on during the first few, you know, chords. You hear that. A wash of the, hey, you know, buy, sell, whatever. You don't really hear that now because most of it's, you know, it's all computerized. And then the bell, the opening bell, the closing bell. Ding, 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 ding. You know, ding, ding, ding. And it was it brought the rhythm in. And I thought that was kind of cool. And they did too. I don't know. I just have a gift for this.
You do. Does it take typically a long time for you to come up with an idea like that and to translate it into something that's close to final? Or is it something that just happens in a moment and out it spews?
I think that's a very good question because I think it's the same thing with songwriting. When it comes quickly and it seems to make sense and it feels good to your, you know, in the pit of your stomach and in your chest and in your soul, that's when you know you're usually on the right track. Mm-hmm. When you have to, you know, after you've got that. In other words, once I came up with that much, that was my melody. And I felt really good about that. You know, once I came up with... That's very singable. Mm-hmm. It's very easy. I probably stole that from 900 different composers. Mm-hmm. But at that point, you know you have something. And then there's the time spent tinkering and figuring out what the intro is going to be. And, you know, there's a show clock and there's a timeline for that first opening minute. It's actually, you know, 59 seconds for the first minute of the opening theme. And they show me when, okay, you have 5 seconds or 8 seconds to be out in front, all music. And then we dial the music under and the announcer starts, you know, the voiceover starts, and then you can come up for a bit and then down. Music's got to be a bed and not get in the way. Mm-hmm. And that's this part. You know, right. It's just rolling underneath, and they're telling us what the stories are going to be today.
Right.
You know? And then it comes up, you know, and so at the end, before they go to the news, they go... After this news.
Right.
That's all kind
exactly.
of 59
The news
seconds.
Is next, right.
Yeah, so, I, you know, once I got in the flow of that, it became really easy. And, you know, they changed the clocks.
Now, you're obviously the idea guy, and I understand that seems to be your primary contribution. Do you actually participate in the production of the final product as well? Do we actually hear B.J. Lederman playing on that final version?
Yes, you do. Some okay. of them, I'm on piano. The very first morning edition, I was on the drum set. Mm-hmm. And there is nothing more damn skippy than being on a drum set after all the instruments have been recorded, you know, to a click track. Mm-hmm. And you put the headset on and they find, you know, they tune those drums for you and get it all mic'd up. I felt like Keith Moon up there just... Mm-hmm. It was lovely. And sometimes some of these bumpers are my fingers on the mm-hmm. piano. This business, the...
That's you.
Yeah, that's me. It's scary sometimes. You know, it's funny driving across country and, you know, from east to west and catching, you know, like 9 different iterations of the same show.
Yeah, that must be fun because, of course, you're a public radio listener, so
yeah.
you're listening to yourself every day.
Yeah.
You mentioned before something about, you know, you design certain parts of the music for certain purposes, but they don't always follow them. Do you actually find yourself getting irritated with the way your music is being used in a particular episode of a particular show?
Yes, I do. And it has little to nothing to do with the fact that I'd like my music to be heard. I mean, I've had much more than my 15 minutes of fame out there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm happy with what I've accomplished in the public radio music world. Mm-hmm. You'd be stupid not to. But it doesn't serve the show well when a local station that has just given their call sign and all the required FCC stuff 30 seconds before... straight up on the next hour, mm-hmm. for instance. Good morning, you know, this is from NPR. This mm-hmm. is the NPR announcers doing it, Steve Inskeep, you know. Mm-hmm. And then they go to, and the local station cuts in and go, and you're listening to WHRV. And I'm going, no! You know, you just said all that. because we've worked so hard, the music has worked so hard, and they've let the music work hard for so many years musically to help establish the identity of this show.
Right.
Okay, let me ask you this. Would you, and now the news, okay, and you know, back in the day when it was Carl Castle, would you let Carl Castle start his news headline and then come over with... on top of him? I don't think so.
Right.
Excuse me, Carl. Sorry. Now you can go on with your...
So station managers and announcers across the nation, take note.
Well, I don't think there's many of them. There are a few. It's not a big deal.
You've mentioned, or it's been mentioned a couple of times here before, the subject of money. And people, I'm sure, are curious as to whether all of this has just made you a multimillionaire and you just sit back in Asheville and live off your NPR earnings.
Well, I've been a multimillionaire 2 or 3 times over. Mm-hmm. And I spent it all on...
Chemistry?
Model tray. No, actually, there's no money in public radio theme music. There's zip.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, this is funny. The first question most people ask me, do you get paid every time? And I'm doing my mother now. I'm channeling my mother. Sorry, Mom. Do you get paid every time they run your music? That's what they all ask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know the answer to that, actually. There's some sort of formula. I'm an ASCAP member, one of the performing rights agencies.
Right.
And there's some sort of formula they use. Put it this way. It's not HBO. So, you know, I don't get paid what John Williams gets paid for, you know, every airing of the theme that he writes.
Mm-hmm.
So it leads one to want to think of other ways to bring income in, especially after 35 years or more on the air with Morning Edition and no album.
Right.
What was I thinking?
Well, you're thinking of an album. And in fact, that's what we're going to talk about next. What is this album that's going to be coming out?
Well, I have been writing songs over the past 3 decades. And some of them are silly love songs. Some of them are just plain silly. When the first Iraq war happened and I was standing there in front of my TV set watching in horror as, you know, CNN unfolded this thing to a timeline, you know, with theme music.
Yeah, I remember
and,
that.
And a logo. I actually wanted to throw my TV right out the window, but I stood there in the living room and watched the stuff, and a song came out, and so I wrote a song about that. And then, of course, with W, I had a chance to write another song. Both of them are on the album, in fact. The first one's called Pray, and it, you know, it's sort of along the lines of whoever owns the presses writes the history. And people tell me that I think too much about what I see, but all I know is what I read in the paper and watch on TV. Okay, it's a little early to be singing. You know, Dylan sounds better than me right now.
So.
I'll just get right to it. People tell me that I think too much about what I see, but all I know is what I read in the paper and watch on TV. If truth is the first victim of war, there's an army of liars pounding on my door, and it's getting so much harder to know just what to believe. When they tell you what's right is wrong, it's just so hard to believe. The band comes in. Used to think that if I worked real hard, I would be okay. But in an instant, some schmuck with a gun could take it all away. Ain't no tomorrow and no master plan, just today, so give it all you can, and pray to whoever you have to put you at ease. And hope whoever comes to save you will like what he sees. Sometimes I catch myself telling my son about the good and the bad, but he's just hearing my old fairy tale and the effect it had. Everybody's gotta pay the rent, except the homeless and the president, and everybody stuck in between is simply yesterday's news, when the only real choice that's left is the freedom to choose. It's a real rocker with the band. You should.
That was striking. But what struck me, and Wayne, was, we were both sitting here tapping our feet with you, what struck me is that even though it's very different fare, it's still very much a B.J. Lederman production.
Yeah, you know that.
You know, I can feel that. And in fact, you have this way of hitting the piano keys.
I hit them like drums. I beat the hell out of
Yeah, you're beating the hell out of that that keyboard. And but that's, I think, part of your style. It's really good. Now, before we go any further, because I want to make sure we do this, what's the name of the album, and when's it coming out?
I want to make sure that this gets to NPR, because I've been saying this for months and I have not gotten a call from their legal department yet. And I fully expect to get a call. The album is called Natural Public Lederman.
Okay, I don't see any problem with that.
Well, wait till you see the logo. It's NPR's logo with my name. It's their color bars. They haven't called themselves National Public Radio for years now. Mm-hmm. It's just NPR. Anyway, Natural Public Lederman.
Lederman, okay.
And for you folks out there who are wondering how to get it, first of all, I would ask that you hit bjlederman.com, because there'll be info there.
Everything's there, right?
I am planning to have a Kickstarter project in November, or the first part of November into the middle part of December. And while the album itself will not be ready until spring, when you buy it on Kickstarter, I will send you a nice little card that you can put under the tree to say, hey, you're going to get Natural Public Lederman. Thank you very much. And there is the music video, a preview of the music video.
Right, that I have up on the Facebook page already.
Right.
The radio show Facebook page here, yeah.
Right. So if you go to your Facebook page or bjlederman.com, it's a preview of it. And you'll notice that it's a cartoon. Some of the heads are cut out and it says your face here.
I noticed that.
I'm trying to figure out. I don't know exactly how I'm going to do it. I think I'm going to let every station sell, quote unquote, during their pledge drives, to be able to auction off those faces, so you can have your face
Photoshop
in my. No, we'll send it back to my animator, and he'll actually animate it in there. And you'll be walking by me.
You'll have a cartoon version of your face in there.
No, it'd be your real face stuck on a cartoon body, which is what.
Right?
Yeah, I figured I've got to introduce myself somehow to the people, and I've got a face made for radio, so that's why I'm here.
That's why we're all here, BJ. That's why we're all here. I understand. Well, we are running out of time,
okay.
So what are your final thoughts? How do you want to end this extraordinary interview?
I'd like to end it with a jingle, if I could.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I wrote this a long time ago, and it was just a parody little thing, and I actually wrote one of these verses this morning, because I figured if you're going to let me come and do it, I better bring it up to date. So this is a little jingle called America, the Jingle. And thank you for having me on, and I hope to see you soon. We got great big skies. We tell great big lies. And if you don't like what we're all about, you can pack up your bags, you can get the hell out. We got the Brothers Coke. We got medical dope. So take another hit, you know it's all you can do, because corporations are people too. We got left-wing reds, we got ditto heads. And just when you thought we'd gone too far, at the bottom of the dial there's NPR. We're America, yeah, we're America. America, a crazy dream come true. America, we're just for you.
And that's our show. Thank you so much to BJ Lederman. Do I seem like a bit of a gushing fanboy? Well, I guess I am. And all I can say in my own defense is that when BJ came into the studio today, everybody here had to get a selfie, including me, and some of those will be posted on our Facebook page, so go and check them out. Our executive producer is Wayne Winkler. Our scheduler is Carol Hutchinson. Our distribution engineer is Chad Barrett. Our music is normally by the Fifes and Drums of Colonial Williamsburg, but today, of course, it was by BJ. I'm Stuart Harris, and remember, you are a part of the American experiment, and some of that experiment involves music.